Hey, good morning to everybody. Okay, good to be back. Everyone had a wonderful Shabbos. So we're about to start the next malacha. That malacha is the malacha of shochet, or sometimes we call it netilas neshama. So since most of us are not shochet, we're not going to spend too much time talking about it, but we are going to spend time talking about something which is potentially part of this malacha, which is very, very relevant, lemaisa, and that's the issa called chovel. Causing a wound, causing somebody to bleed, causing a person or an animal to bleed, either oneself or others, so is an outright issa deraisa. As we'll see as we go on, according to many views, and quite possibly the way we accept, it's related somehow to the malacha of shochet. Let's just get a little bit of a background to this as to why we're even talking about this topic at the time we're talking about it. So the issa of chovel, the fact that drawing blood is an absolute issa gomer on Shabbos, it's an issa deraisa on Shabbos, that is not negotiable. It doesn't mean that every single case where you cause yourself to bleed may be an issa deraisa. There may be other mitigating factors to that, but the ikaron, fundamentally, the starting point of the entire sugya is that chovel is an issa gomer that there are mishnayos and gemaras and explicit in many, many sugyas and shas. However, even though it's obvious to Chazal that it is usur, it is far from obvious in the Rishonim as to why it's usur. 39 different possibilities of malachas. It's probably not kosei, probably not chorish, or abishal, so they're limited a few of them, but there are at least three different possibilities, at least three, maybe even more possibilities that we showed him as to which issur exactly chovel falls under. But the fact that chovel is also, that's not negotiable. How did Chazal know that it's so not negotiable? Like, it's one of those things that's just a given of each day. Usually the things that are not negotiable in Shabbos are the things that the Alamites Malachas, the Avos Malachas, as if you're in the Mishkan, so those are not negotiable. But something that wasn't in the Mishkan, clearly Chovel wasn't in the Mishkan because Harai, it's not an Avalacha. The name of the list is not Chovel. Chovel doesn't appear in any one of the 39 Avalacha's books. So how did Chazal know so certain that Chovel is actually also it's also in the Torah? So the answer is actually found in the Daf Yomi of these last couple of days. But the fact that the Torah tells us that you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos, at least if it's a milah bismana. So by Yom HaShemim Yimah B'Sar Al-Oso. So those who are learning Rebbe Lezda Mila have been very, very much heavily involved in these drushes the last couple of days. So it's a given that a bris mila is Beicha Shabbos. And the implication is obvious that if not for the Torah telling it to me, it would have been Asur. I.e. it would have been a Nisa Deraisa. It would have only been Nisa Derabana. I don't need a Pasuk to be Matur, otherwise Nisa Derabana. So from the back of the Kodesh Baruch Hu went out of his way, so to speak, in the Torah to tell us, that in of itself indicates to us that the act of Mila, which is an act of Chayvah, because there is no other Malacha done. There's nothing else that's done in the bris that even smacks of Malacha. Eating a bagel is not a Malacha. Saying Baruch Haba, Vedav Shema Shlema, Pirchas Bela, that's not a Malacha. So the only thing that's a Malacha is the act of the cutting with the bleeding. So that would have been a malacha. So Kamash Lai, so the Gemara says earlier on in Masechet Shabbos, the Kuvav, it's Yadu before some that Chovel is in Issa Deraisa, but the mere fact that the Torah was Matre. But again, we're not sure which Issa Deraisa it is. So we're going to focus on the three primary opinions that appear in the Rishonim as to which Issa it is. It's going to be the last one that's going to be the most relevant for us to really get the ball rolling in terms of the malacha of Shechet. So first we'll deal with the two that have nothing to do with that topic, and then we'll hopefully get to the one that really is at issue at this point. So the two opinions that are not part of our discussion, one appears in Rashi in the beginning of the 14th Berachos of Shabbos, Ben Shiratzim, where the Mishnah speaks about Chovel, and Rashi says, at least quotes one opinion, that it smacks of the Malach of Seveya, of dyeing, of coloring. Coloring, what is Chovel have to do with coloring? Well, when you cause somebody to bleed, so you're inevitably going to color that area. The skin's going to get red. Or let's say, even if you don't literally cause them to bleed, you cause them to black and blue mark. So you just color, just change the coloring. It's called Nitzra Adam. You just change the coloring of the person's skin, the person's area under the skin. So that is considered to be a concern of Tzeveya, says Rashi. That's a very, very difficult opinion. Many Rishonim had a lot of it. Rashi himself takes issue with it. Rashi himself quotes that there are others who said it wasn't correct. Rashi does quote in passing that view that there's some kind of connection between Chovel and Tzeveya. And very hard for us to understand. Usually we think of Tzeveya more like a person coloring wool and painting a picture or things like that. And somehow the idea of coloring my skin because I now have a red bark on my skin or something. So it's hard for us to conceptualize that being Tzeveya. So don't feel bad if we find difficulty conceptualizing it. Tosfos didn't, couldn't. Turns out the same problem, the Rambam had the same problem, most of the Rishonim probably had the same problem. So the this call Chayvel Tzaveya is an opinion that appears in Rishonim, but it's hard for us to understand. There's a second approach that's taken by the Rambam, which would also take some, which would take Chayvel out of our discussion for now. The Rambam says that Chayvel is also because of Malachas Disha. What is Disha? This is a throwback to 2 years ago. We spoke about threshing grain. What is the Malach of threshing grain? So I have this grain which has some the good stuff inside, it's got the bad stuff outside, it's got the chaff, the bran, I don't know what any of these things are. You have to read the box, the back of the box of raisin bran to understand what some of these things are. So I go ahead and I exert pressure and I push, either I stamp on it or I get my animal to stamp on it or I get a machine to stamp on it, and I separate by pressure and I extract the part that I want from the surroundings. So the extracting of something that I want from the surrounding part that I don't want, that is the basic essence of the Malach of Disha. And that's why the Gemara speaks about schikas peiros, squeezing out fruit under certain circumstances. If I squeeze a cluster of grapes, a cup of grape juice, that would be an issur deraisa. Because again, I'm basically exerting pressure on the grapes, thereby extracting the juice from the rest of the grapes that I don't want. That's the etzem of Malach of Disha. So the Rambam says that when you cause somebody to bleed, so you're doing the same thing. You are exerting, you're doing something, some physical action that's now causing the blood to come out of where it used to be inside the body. So if you look at that illustration of a grape, so if you're the same way, if you squeeze out the juice out of a grape, Yechayim, those two of you, quote unquote, get out the blood of the person's body, the animal's body, that would also be a malacha of Disha. Now, this is also a red flag in terms of malachas, because there is a big machlekes ha-tanoim whether the malach of Disha is limited to gedulei karka or not. According to one opinion, the view of the actually not just one, the majority of the view of the chachamim in Masechet Shabbos Ayin Hay, it's called Ein Disha Ella the gedulei karka. Just as Disha was practiced in the Mishkan with the samanim, with the herbs, with the dyes that they were preparing for the coloring and things in the Mishkan, so too, the Deiris, the only time the Malach of Disha is violated in the Torah is only with the Gedulei Karka. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. Rabbi Yehuda said the fact that the Karka, that was a technicality, that was tangential, that was external. But you can violate Disha Deiris even without Gedulei Karka. So that was a running machlokes at the Rambam. So when the Rambam turns around and says you can have Disha Deiris, but when you cut yourself, you draw blood from somebody, that's Disha Deiris, I don't grow on the ground, I'm not Gedulei Karka. So the problem is, but the Rambam paskins like the Chum, that ain't Disha of Gedulei Karka. That's a huge problem. And it's not my problem. This is all the nice that came in the Rambam, jumped about the Mishnah, and I was jumping around and say, wait a second, you have your cake and eat it. If you really hold that ain't Disha of Gedulei Karka, how can you turn around and say that Chogel is Chayav Mishum Disha? But the truth is, this is not the first time that the Rambam has posed this problem for us, this challenge for us, because if you remember way, way back, we spoke about the Malacha of Cholev. Chovel and Cholev is just by a quirk have the same letter. Yeah. I mean, if you're giving a Chalashim instruction, maybe back in Matthew, you would come with some deep, dark secret as to what the relationship is. You'd say, Dab Nekav and Asa Cholev, and you know, this relation between the blood and milk, and then you have a whole Torah about it, but we're going to leave that part for now. There's a malacha, there's an issur of Cholev and an issur of Chovel. The Cholev is to milk an animal, but to extract milk from a human being. So when you milk an animal on Shabbos, so the Ruba the Rishon is that's in the Siddur Aisa. The Stam Gemara in Shabbos Taliyeh says that's in the Siddur Aisa. That's a huge problem. What Malach is it? So the Rambam writes, it's Malach of Disha. It's the same thing. I'm squeezing on the udder of the animal. Milk's coming out. Sure, that's Malach of the Aisa of Disha. So the same Magid Mishnah, the same Nesek Kelim say, how could that be? If the Rambam Paskin say Disha of Gula Karka. So there are actually so many, there are many Rishon who were so bought of that Kasha. How can you say that cholev, how do you say that cholev, that milking is included in Disha, that ain't Disha of Gula Karka? So some Rishonim said, you see from here, we pass in that, yesh Disha is from Gula Karka. Another Rishonim said, you see from here, that cholev is taka not there, Isa. But the Rambam goes down either of those paths. And the halacha, the Rishonim go down either of those paths. So we have to defend that. How could it be? How could cholev be there, Isa, and yet ain't Disha of Gula Karka? Which is in effect the same question we're asking here. How could Chovel be Geraisa if Ein Disha of Gedulei Karka? So you have this Rambam time and time again who's repeating to us the same identical scenario that you can have Malachas Geraisa of Disha that are involving not Gedulei Karka, and yet the Rambam in the same breath says Ein Disha of Gedulei Karka. Something's fishy here. So the answer that many, many give, the Mishnah gives, and the truth is that Tosfos already preempted this answer and didn't like it. And he spoke about this months, years ago already. The basic answer most probably is that the Rambam has a much broader perspective on what Gedulei Karka means. That we usually think that Gedulei Karka means something that grows in the ground. It means literally, something that's literally coming out of the ground. So the emphasis is that Gedulei Karka probably means a little bit more than that, according to the Rambam. That Gedulei Karka could mean even... was there a loss for a second? In the, still okay, the sounds all right? Still good? Okay, fine. I thought there was a little bit of a break. Okay, fine. So the Rambam most probably had a broader understanding of Gedulei Karka, that you and I are also Gedulei Karka. Why are we Gedulei Karka? Because we're nourished from the Karka. We eat things, we get our nourishment from the Karka. So let's say, for example, I just ate breakfast. What did I eat for breakfast? So just had a bowl of cereal. The bowl of cereal was bran flakes with dehydrated strawberries or something, whatever they're called. The strawberries are enough to be checked for bugs, whatever they're called. Freeze dried. The strawberries were so puttered for those bugs, not even the bugs that left. So the strawberries grew in the ground, the bran flakes grew in the ground, the almond milk that I had, I didn't have a cup of milk, I would have explained how the milk was grew in the ground. The almond milk came from almonds grew in the ground. Everything I ate grows in the ground. Just everything we eat grows in the ground. Some things are a little bit more directly from the ground. Something has undergone a lot of Tanu Chadash's Balmakan. Usually the more changes they undergo, the less healthy they become. But we all ultimately are basically nourished. I've never said what we eat basically comes from the ground. So comes the Rambam most probably and says that those are all considered to be included in a very, very broad spectrum of Gedulei Karka. If that's the case, so a cow is Gedulei Karka. And if we're looking at cow, is there Isa to a person is Gedulei Karka. And if we're causing a person to bleed, would be Deraisa. A person is a mammal, is Gedulei Karka. If even a woman, if a person nurses on Shabbos, but not necessarily nursing, but rather extracts the milk in a way that's not directly to the baby, so that could be a potential. So Deraisa on Shabbos. So one has to be very, very careful with all these kinds of milk extracting, neurokunsim, these could Deraisa. I just had a very fascinating opportunity on Friday in the mountains on Shabbos. So we stopped by Rabbi Center, very close friends of ours. So they, spoke about it in the past. He has some animals up. He has a place in the mountains. He has a couple of animals there. So he was showing us his goats. So he was explaining to me how he's what's called the ibud on Shabbos. So he was explaining to me exactly like they do in the kibbutz in Eretz Yisrael, the Moshe in Eretz Yisrael. They have to milk the animals. If you don't milk the animals, and then the animal's going to suffer greatly. So you have to extract the milk. You have to extract the ibud, because if you don't extract the ibud, if you would extract the milk and then save it and give it drink it later, that would be an issur deraisa. So any milk that's done on Shabbos has to be done on the ibud. So it's not the gufa, it's not the chaliva, not the chadish. You have different svaras that are involved. But this is all assuming that otherwise milking could be a deraisa on Shabbos, and wounding people and animals could be deraisa on Shabbos. The bottom line is that according to the Rambam, the malacha of Chayvel really falls under the category of the malacha of Disha. So we have two sheikhs in Rishonim that they're both fascinating, both have their problems there, but neither of them is really Esther. Neither of them is that malacha. The malacha that we want to focus on is the view of Rabbi Tam. Tam says that the real malacha involved in Chayvel is the malacha of Betilas Neshama. It's shechting, it's killing, it's taking your life, that's the malacha. Taking your life, I'm meant to get a blood test. Hashem, I'm still here. So why is that considered to be a malacha of the Shema? The Tam puts a poska by Shrekia, Dam hu nefesh. The Dam is considered to be the nefesh, the Shema of a person, and the Mali Kutla Kula Mali Kutla Palga. What's the difference whether you kill a person or an animal totally, or you kill a little bit of it? So by taking away a little bit of the blood of the animal, so you are taking a little bit of the Shema of the Hashem. Be careful when we draw blood for a person that goes to donate blood to the Red Cross. You don't want to kill totally, so you kill them a little bit. So every time you take a little bit of the blood away, a little drop, a little more than a drop, and that's called the netila niktas, is the shavu niktas, and that's the reason why it's also been a Torah. So again, a lot of different arrays in different opinions as to which malacha it's covered by, but acharei kol, the malacha is. The malacha is definitely deraisa. It's not a shiloh that's a deraisa. Not even something that's a deraisa. again, derived from Bris Milah, but we're not exactly sure which one it is. So for our purposes, we're going to continue from here on in, working with Rabbi Natan's phraseology, which is, again, probably the view of most of the Rishonim, and most probably the view of the later Poskim. It's probably we accept the halacha, that we have to look at all acts of Chavala, both the behemoth of the Adam, under the microscope of the malacha of Sherechet, the malacha of the Tilis, the Shara. So let's begin to try to find some real life scenarios of Chovel, some situations that really arise that become Shalas of Chovel. So it's interesting that most Yeshiva Bachrim learn the Sugi of Chovel through the eyes of Maseches Ksubas. It's just it's a general phenomenon in the Yeshivas that since many, many Yeshivas are limited to, limit themselves to certain Masechtas, they're called the Yeshivisha Machzor, the Yeshivisha Masechtas. It's usually basically translates to the three bavas and the bavas ksubas kitten and kedushin, and then depending which yeshiva you're in, when the dharma and shavuah sticks in for a kayat or something. But there's certain, you know, the hardcore nashvas in the sechtas, which have become almost like traditional. It is not a phenomenon in America. This is already a phenomenon back. This dates back already to Europe. But this was almost like the curriculum, so to speak, for the standard years in yeshivas. Usually what happens is when the Bachim get old and they get married and they start going to Kolo, then they start filling in the gaps. All the Moed Masechtas, then Chulin starts to make an appearance, and Nida makes an appearance, and other things make appearances. A lot of those things fill out their knowledge base as they get a little bit older. Why is a little bit of a different mahalach? Why is it mahalach? A lot of things, but why is a little bit of a different mahalach in terms of this? That we've incorporated some of the quote unquote nine Yeshiva Masechtas even into the regular Mamzorim, in the sense that we even have, we learn every 3 years in theory, when the Machzor works out. We learn every 3 years, we learn a Moed Masechtas. That means that the Bachurim may potentially end up getting exposed to a Shabbos, to a Psochim. Next year, the Yeshiva's learning Psochim. This past year, we learned Chulim. That was a whole other issue. That was really supposed to learn Gittin, and then there was a somewhat of a conflict between the Yeshivas and Eretz Yisrael this year and last year, and the whole Sipur. So we couldn't find how to get out of that. That Chulim was a bad choice. Chulim was the one I love the sense Chulim. All the people asked me what's my favorite Masechta. The answer is the doors of Masechta that the Yeshiva's learning that year. That's my favorite Masechta. So I love Masechta Chulim, but it wasn't even part of the regular Machzor. So it was a Yaitz Meklal of the Yaitz Meklal. So it was a little bit of a quirk this year in Yeshiva. But anyway, get back to the story. So those Yeshiva Bachrim are not so exposed to the Sugyos of Masechta Shabbos until much later in life. So usually the introduction to Malachi Shabbos comes about there. Of Kama, so that's when the Rebbe sticks in everything about that particular malacha. So to over here, that the whole malacha, the whole discussion of Malachas Chovel comes up in the beginning of Maseches Ksubas, and that's when the yeshivas that learned the first Rebbe Ksubas end up talking about Malachas Chovel, and Psikratius, all the Torahs that we've been saying over the course of the last 2 years learning Hilchos Shabbos and Malachas, so they end up doing an avav in Maseches Ksubas. That's just the way the Seder in Bar Mar. If you look at Rebbe Baruch Ber, so Rebbe Baruch Ber has been saying Shirim in Ksubas, we have Shir of these inyanim related to Malachas Shabbos. So the Malach of Chovel makes a grand appearance in Maseches Ksubas in the following sense. The Gemara raises the following shayla, Ma livo b'tchilu b'Shabbos? Is a person permitted to have Bia Rishayna on Shabbos? The person gets married, on a Friday. So is the couple permitted to be together on the first Friday night? What's the shayla? The shayla is that she's most probably going to bleed, she's going to have Dab Basulim. So is the act of Bia Rishayna, which will supposedly cause Dab Basulim, is that considered to be a Malach on Shabbos? Is that an Isra on Shabbos? Is that a problem of being made to that normally? I'm not allowed to draw blood. I'm not allowed to take a blood test. I put my finger on Shabbos. So by doing a Maisa Bia Rishayna, is that inevitably going to be a violation of being chayvel and Shabbos? So it's in that sugya that Tosfos starts talking. What's the malacha? Is it tzevei? Is it sheichim? Is it this? Is it that? Is it shama? Is it rabbi mshita? It's disha. So all the Torahs begin on that sugya. What's the answer to the question? Now, ma'al v'ok chayvel Shabbos mutar also. The Gemara has a sugya for about a daf long about this topic. And finally, the Gemara concludes: Hilchasa mutar levo b'tchilu b'Shabbos. That's not permissible. So wow, it sounds like great. It sounds like. The answer is over. The sugi is over. The problem is, well, why is it mutter? It's not a pelam. The question is better than the answer. Why should it be mutter live up to b'Shabbos? So if you look carefully at that sugya, there are a few different factors that go into why it should not be asur mutter. And the problem is that it's not clear for the Gemara what the final factor is. So one factor that
it's addressed in the Gemara, is maybe the dam that's coming out, the Shas, Vivishana, maybe that's not considered to be including the Isser of Chayva altogether. What Manishtana, that dam, it's the same blood, red blood cells, the same plasma, the same white blood, my hat. So the Gemara has a phrase, which it's hard for us exactly to understand. The Gemara has a phrase that some dam is considered to be dam nefke pokid, that some dam in the body is considered to be almost like a kadam, like it's like separate a little bit, like it's almost like stored separately than the rest of the body. Now that does not mean, again, we understand that doesn't mean to say the blood doesn't circulate throughout the body. It's irrelevant what Chazal thought about the blood circulating or not. Before the days of William Harvey, so most of the world didn't really understand exactly what circulation of blood is all about. It doesn't really impact us at all. But Chazal do speak about some blood is almost being viewed as like a little bit separate from the rest of the body. What does it mean? How do we understand that in terms that we can identify with? So it could be what Chazal mean is that Dam Besulim, again, it's still part of the same blood moving around, but Dam Besulim is a kind of a blood that the Fiderch HaTeva is, in a sense, not supposed to be here. It means the way Kadosh Baruch Hu created a woman's body, so that area that hymenal blood is supposed to come out. That's what's supposed to happen. Blood in my finger is not supposed to come out. If I cut my finger, then the blood comes out. So that's all blood and essential over there, Chateva. But the blood of Dam Besulim is that Kadosh Baruch Hu created in such a way that it's under the kach to come out. From the day that the girl's born, it's under the kach to come out. So maybe you can understand that the Gemara means something like that. Again, I don't know. Whenever you see almost like quasi-scientific terms in Chazal, it's always hard for us to exactly understand what halacha, the science, exactly is all about in terms of understanding for science. And Chazal do use the term of nefer pocket, that somehow this blood is considered to be physically slash halachically, somehow external to the rest of the regular blood supply. And maybe this somehow wouldn't be subject to the halacha of Chayvel. So that's one possibility. Then the Gemara throws out a whole other reason why maybe it should be mutter. Maybe it should fall into the category of Darshan Miskavim. That even if you say that the act of drawing the blood is a malacha per se, but that's not what the person's intent is. His intent is that be a Rishayna. And it could be that some of the blood's going to come out. The Gemara says, what do you mean it could be some of the blood's going to come out? It's for sure the blood's going to come out. Isn't that a psik resha? Maybe it could be. What do you mean it could be some blood's going to come out? Isn't it for sure the blood's going to come out? So the Gemara gets now into a little bit of a tricky discussion. The Gemara says that maybe it's not absolute, maybe it's not absolute. The Gemara quotes that that it's possible for a person to have beer shed without causing blood, even if they're b'sulim present. If they're not b'sulim present, then obviously it's not going to be bleeding. But even if the b'sulim are intact, a person could still have what's called a lachli bia. The Gemara says efshe b'atoya, that the beer can be done in such a way that it's not outright going to cause the bleeding. It can be done in some angle, way, some way that won't necessarily result in blood. So if that's the case, that it won't necessarily result in bleeding, so then one can argue that maybe that's not obsecration anymore. Again, that opens up a whole other discussion about obsecrations and carnal obsecrations, the nichalis, the low nichalis, a lot of terrorists. And on that sugya is where, as the huge tosis on the beginning of the second sugya, where Tosin Davah, but Tosin discusses all the shitas of obsecrations, the nichalei, and lo nichalei, and again, that's where in yeshivas, that's where all the terrorists of obsecrations and davashim skaves, mokshim and gufas, everything appears in that sugi maseches ksubas. So when all the dust settles, there are almost two different reasons why Chazal permit bilchus avudah levo b'tchil b'shabbos. Either it's avudah because just halachically slash scientifically, that blood is different. That blood is just not shach to the parish to the din of chayvah, whatever deep dark secret of dam nefke pocket. Or it's mutter based on a regular rule of the Shabbos and it doesn't really meet the criteria of a psigresha, and therefore we fall back on davashim skav and davashim skav being mutter. It's not clear exactly what the reason why Chazal amatir. But lemaisa Chazal amatir. At the end of the day, when all the dust settles, it's mutter. The Gemara says the fair hilchasa mutter. So it's kind of hard to argue when the Gemara itself says hilchasa. But nevertheless, come to Rishon and say, wait a second, not so simple. The reason why it's mutter may be very, very important. So the Hagos Ashri, the notes and the rush from the other Rishonim, from the Rus and others who came at the around the time of the rush, so other added notes, and these Rishonim say, wait a second, not so simple. The reason why it's mutter makes all the difference in the world, because it's going to have enough kamina whether it's actually mutter today. In the days in Bavel, the Amorim, not Kapaski, Bukhsa Mutter, so it's Mutter, questions, does that spill over to today? So the Gosh says, depends what the reason was. If the reason was because because of dam nefke pocha. This dam is different. This dam is separate. This is unique. This is distinct from the system, and therefore it's not, doesn't speak to us at all. There's no parashat chayva, nothing. If that's what's going on, okay, so then whatever that meant, that it means for us also. So then it's mutta little between the Shabbos when you live in Babylonia, you live in Pupadis in the year 400, or you live in Germany in the year 1200, or you live in Burgerville the year 2020. So it's mutter, it's mutter. Chazal says it's mutter, it's finished. But says the Gosh Asher, the reason why it's mutter is because that it's possible to be boil without being mighty dam. So the Gemara itself says that that idea of being boil without being mighty dam is not so poshut. Now, there are many, many women today don't have dam basula, not chas shalom because they did anything wrong when they were kids, but it's very often there are many things that happen. Sometimes women have medical procedures, sometimes women some exercising, horseback riding, maisa. There are many, many reasons why the maisa, sometimes the basula are broken, totally they have there, no one did anything wrong. So, you know, it's not unheard of, this man has said. But the Gemara says that even the women with dam basula are intact, it's still possible not to be mighty dam. So the Gemara itself says that's not so poshut. Even Bizanic Gemara, the Gemara says not so poshut. The Gemara says it was certain of the kiyas. You have to have a certain understanding how to do that properly. So the Rishonim write that Bizmanazem doesn't have that. Bizmanazem, most the chassid gets married, so most of the time there's dam. So if there's going to be dam, so then it may be already a psikoresha for us. That maybe the kula of chazal, psikoresha, not existing because it's efshel of adam, may break down as manazeh. If it breaks down as manazeh, then it falls back to being a psikoresha. It falls back to being a psikoresha. That becomes a problem on Shabbos. So when the Gemara said, Hil chasamut l'chum Shabbos, comes and goes to Asher and says, no, flag down on the plane, not so simple. Maybe that was true 1700 years ago in that society, for whatever reason, people they have to figure out better. Whatever reason, whatever the Mitzias is, whatever the Maisa, the story is, the facts don't seem to be the same. So we're not changing what Chazal said. We can't overturn Pesach and the Gemara. But as we've said numerous, countless times, Halacha doesn't change, but Mitzias does change. And when Mitzias changes, so Maneil, the Halacha, quote unquote, appears to change in response to the new fact of Mitzias. So you give a Pesach today, you have to make sure you understand what Mitzias is today. That's why one of the reasons why it's becoming more and more hard to pass Shilas is because Mitzvahs is changing so fast and so many things. You know, in the olden days, 20 years ago, so usually you give up Pesach on something, so pretty much less. But the world, you know, even if you think about, you know, the changes in the world, yeah, there were changes in the world from the days of Babylonia in the 300s until Europe in the 1800s. You know, there were some changes. But believe it or not, they weren't so drastic. There were a lot of things that were the same, and the basic fundamental, you know, the cows were still milked in the 300s, they were milked in the 1800s. You know, things were people's challenges. How do you milk a cow on Shabbos? It didn't change much in 1500 years. You know, how do you sweep a barn on Shabbos? It didn't change much in 1500 years. You know, how do you hot topics that were in how to put food on the fire and the coals outside? You know, things didn't change much. But in the last 100 years, the world's changed a tremendous amount. In the last 50 years, it's changed a huge amount. And in the last 10 years, it's changed a lot. Even more so, since the pace of technology is so much faster than it ever was, so inevitably, the shaylas are going to become, Lahavdil, those in the world of medicine know this very well. If a person's been hasn't practiced medicine in 10 years, there so much has changed. There's so many new things. In the realm of Pesach Halacha also, a Rav takes the attitude that he's just going to pass the Shabbos based on the Mitzias of 1920, so then his Pesachim are going to be very often outdated. So we have to send the rabbis back for continuing education also. So you have to always keep in touch with what's changing on the ground. So it's getting back to our story. So that's what the Gosh Rashi writes, that something changed, that the Mitzias changed. In the days of Chazal, some of that was a Psychration, and today in Germany it is a Psychration. So that's going to happen after the Medina. So maybe the whole Hepter of the Gemara doesn't exist anymore. May not exist anymore. So we should try to refrain from this. The Rook quotes, there are some communities that refrain from it. So for us, most of the time, it's not so relevant because we don't have too many weddings on Fridays like we used to have in Europe. But even if you have weddings on Thursdays, very, as Yadua, we don't have to elaborate, but Yadua, that very often a couple doesn't succeed at first, and very often the Birishana may end up being in Shabbos. If the couple got married early in the week, very often the Birishana is on Shabbos. So this does become a topic for us as well. So we pass in that the Ik Mikra din is Mutter, because we seem to accept the view of Tam Mifka Pocket. So we're not so worried about the Chaval aspect, but the Mishnah Berurah calls there are some Paiskim who are Chayshish, there were Minhagim in communities in Europe that would refrain from being voted in the Shabbos. Strangely enough, we have a minig Yisrael, Adayin Azeh, that is very, very important. And strangely enough, part of this minig is predicated on the practice of Asal of B'Chilim Shabbos. What? Where? Who? What's this minig? What am I talking about? It's a Din Anachas Shabbos, Din Anachas Nida, that came into existence. Part of what caused this Din, or this minig Yisrael to come into existence, was based on those communities that didn't burn B'Chilim Shabbos. What am I referring to as Shabbos? The Gemara says at the end of Maseches Dida that right before a couple gets married, so let's say the woman is muteret. Let's say she's an older woman, she's not been getting a period anymore. Even if she already had a period, she went to mikvah already a week ago. So the Gemara tells us that right before a woman gets married, so she experiences what's called dam chimud. But there's always that concern that, as we know, that women's hormones are very susceptible to emotions, excitement. If the woman's getting excited to get married, so that may trigger a little bit of a response. Maybe a little bit of dam, we may not even notice it. And therefore, the verse says, Chazal made a takana called dam chimud. Chimud means like musachma, like to want something, to come something, to desire something. So when the woman's getting ready to get married, so she has to automatically assume that she may become a nida, even though she hasn't seen anything. And the Gemara says it was a low clue, even though the woman, she's 95 years old, she's getting married, she hasn't had 30 years, it doesn't matter, that is a chashash, that the tabuli nasit, she relates to shirinikim. She has to observe shirinikim, she has to treat herself like she's a nida, and she has to go to the mikvah. It's a form of dinner d'rabbanan, even though she's 99% chance she's finally nida. The chazal masakin, that doesn't matter. The bully knows it's tzvichalei shevikiyah. Now, most of the time for us, it's not relevant because our girls, when they get married for the first time, they're all tzvichalei nida. Anyway, none of them ever went to the mikvah when they were single. So, and if they're going to be for it. If you have a woman who's getting married for the second time, so if her husband died or she was divorced 3 years ago, she hasn't gone to be for years, so she's right there indeed. So, of course, she has to go to be before she gets married. So, when a woman gets married today, she's going to be for the din der ice of Nida. And then, by the way, she's also been yates the din of Tavoli Nasi. So, for us, we don't usually think of Tavoli Nasi too much because the Lavach are going to be for the normal reasons. Nevertheless, there is a machlekes in Rishonim when we speak about the din that Kala has to go to the mikvah for this din derabbanan, this chumah derabbanan of Tavoli Nasi. So there's a machlekes in Rishonim. At what point does the dam chibah begin? When do we have to assume that where she's being chamedah, so to speak, that the concern begins? So there were some Rishonim who say that the Lashon Gemara is tavua l'nasi. Once she gets engaged, once they requested to get married and they set a wedding date. That's what some Rishonim about. When she has a wedding date, she knows that she's getting married on the day of Pliny. So that's when the Dam Chibud begins. And any time after that, she has to observe Shirin Nikim and go to the mikvah. It could be 6 months before the actual wedding. So she has a wedding date set for next January, and they get engaged, and they make a part, and they tell everybody, pencil, you know, they send you an evite, you know, a reminder that save the date kind of a thing. So once the date is set in stone already, shows, and then she can catch her in the key, and then go to mikvah, and then she doesn't have to worry about anything for the next 6 months. Now again, if she's a woman who's still having periods, that would be pretty silly to do, because she's going to have to go to mikvah again 6 months later. But if she's 95 years old, she doesn't want to worry about it anymore, she does the mikvah one time, and show myself. The holy nasi begins at the time when the date is set. And the other opinion Rishonim says is that you have to get it closer to the wedding. The chimah grows and grows. Right? You get closer, excitement builds. You have to start catching the kid. You have to catch the kid 6 months before. You have to catch the kid as close to the wedding as possible. We have to fine tune what that means. What does it mean as close to the wedding as possible? So two different opinions. So how do we follow? We follow in a sense both. We follow that you can't count the shemekiyah before the tavul dinosay, before what the Rishonim say, before the date is set, you can't count shemekiyah, before there's any chibud, then there's mamash no chibud whatsoever. So the earliest possible time to count shemekiyah is from the date being set. And then also, we don't like to count from the minute that she gets engaged. We tell her to hold off on the count until close, up, see the moment, hopefully, how close to the wedding is. Just as an aside, They see it's Rabbanim too. We say Tzitzia sometimes changes. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would have to pass in Shilas of Tavoli Nase Tzichaleshim Shivnikim, because whoever ever has to, would have ever dreamt in their wildest dreams that you have to think of a woman potentially getting married within 7 days of when she's planning on getting married. Whoever has less than a seven-day wedding days of preparation. So a person gets engaged, let's say, today, 3 weeks, not the way we're getting engaged today. But let's say a person's going to get engaged right after Tisha B'Av. So they'll set a wedding date for after Yom Tov, for November or something. So show. So then according to have to be shown, they could start to count Shivnikim at that point. That's Olam Kibin Hagai. Of course, in the last couple of months, there's been anything but Min Hagai. So is there anyone who's been involved in any wedding kinds of preparations, or family members who've gotten married, who've been invited to weddings? So how many invitations have you gotten in the last 3 or 4 months that have read something like this? We invite you to the wedding of such and such, you know, assuming it's going to take place, to be determined. And then a week later you get saying, oh, by the way, the wedding has just been moved to another place. And then 2 days later you get an invite saying that the wedding's been switched to a different place. And then 3 days later you tell you the wedding's been pushed off for a week. And then a week later you get an invite saying the wedding was just jumped up by a week. So, meisim b'chol yod is how weddings are late. So, there were times in the last couple of months where I had to believe once a shadow, where a couple didn't think that they were getting married they thought that they were getting married in another month, and they weren't even sure when they were getting married in a month. And then all of a sudden, you know, regulations are changing, and my stuff are changing, and this would kick up, and they're nervous about them. And all of a sudden, we're making a wedding in 3 days. It's not so simple. It's not pashut. You can't just wake up and say, make a wedding in 3 days. The woman has to go to the mikvah. So if she can't get to the mikvah, so she has to wait first for a week before she goes to the mikvah. So you have to have some degree of preparation of a minimum of a week. Otherwise, you're going to run into shadows of tabulinos, and then you run into other shadows. The post can talk about, what if you set a date, she goes to the mikvah, and then you have to delay the wedding. So the post can say, it depends how bad you delay. If you delay in the old days, the Shulchanoch describes, sometimes they would have a wedding date set, and then there would be a pogrom. So it'd be a pogrom, you had to wait 3 days till it was safe. So with manazel, hopefully that's Shem, we should talk about that pogroms. So today, what do we have? We have, you all set to have a wedding, and then all of a sudden all the regulations change. So now you're running around states to find another wedding venue. So again, I'm not advocating, I'm not discussing, I'm not commenting my opinion on weddings under these circumstances. I'm just relating to you the facts of the ground, what Rabbanim have been dealing with. So I had a shiloh not that long ago where we had to determine, was this a dichei hanisuin that re-requires to count Shivnikim? Maybe the woman went to the mikvah. I had women who had to go to the mikvah more than once because they went to the mikvah not having a wedding, and then the wedding was canceled, and then they have to wait another 2 weeks to go to the mikvah again. So we've got a lot of wild things going on in the last couple of months. Anyway, get back to the story. What is that for the Shabbos? That's the Shabbos. So we also follow the view that you have to count the Shivnikim close to the chasun. You shouldn't jump start it 3 months before. Even if you have a wedding date set and no one, there's no corona, there's no pogroms or nothing, you still shouldn't jump. You shouldn't jump start this count. You should try to wait until as close to the chasun as possible. But let's make this thought. How close is close? So there are more quotes of practice that existed in Eastern Europe, and we still have until today, that within 4 days the chasun has been enough. There's nothing. If you're going to the mikvah 4 days before the wedding, that's okay. Well, what should they 4 days? We made up 4 days. Why is 4 days considered to be close? So the Ramah explains it was a combination of two different minhagi Yisrael. They almost like merged together to create a magic number four, which it principally doesn't correspond to anything, but it was just the following practice. In the days of Chazal, the first Rishon Ksuba says, Sulamisis Yomarvi. Women used to get married on Wednesday. And that was because he wanted it to, just in case it would be in Shiloh, the basin was available Thursday morning, etc. So that doesn't even apply to his manazad, but they didn't sit on Thursdays today, they sit all week, but they don't sit at all. So the mice, the whole din, so in this MRV, the whole first singing subas is not relevant to the mice in the first mission. But the mission starts out, so in this MRV. So therefore, there was an age old practice. We don't have this practice, but it was an age old practice during our rites. There's a minute, the women who go to the mikvah on Tuesday nights. The same way it was not Chazal. That's when the great, 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 great grandmothers in Babylonia went to the mikvah on Tuesday night. You're getting married on Wednesday, you go to mikvah the night before. So that was the minhag in Eastern Europe that the kallahs would always go. That was the night that was reserved for the kallahs. The mikvah Tuesday night, the kallahs would go. When were the weddings? Tachlis. When did the weddings take place in Eastern Europe? On Fridays, that we know. Why did it take place on Friday? For a very simple reason. They didn't have enough money to buy 2 chickens for in 1 week. So you had only one night of chicken a week. So make up your mind. Either Friday night meal or chasen meal. So they actually kind of This is a very, very bad pun, and please, I didn't mean it literally, but it's to kill two birds with one stone. That's exactly what the pun is. I saw a few people, I see their faces, I saw a couple of chuckles out of that. Okay, so they were, well, that was the Middle Eastern Europe. They would make the weddings on late Friday afternoon. That's when the Magen Avraham talks about the Shabbos. He says, if you're at a wedding and it's time to ben shlach, then you can't get out of the wedding in time. Can you ask a goy to buy light for you? So people today scratch their heads. Who's at a wedding at Friday at 6 o'clock? Well, the wedding's over. The marina closed on Thursday night. Well, who's at Friday afternoon at a wedding? In the Magen Avraham, in Poland, in Eastern Europe, in the 1500s, people were at weddings on Friday afternoon. So the minig in Eastern Europe was they would make weddings Friday afternoon, and then everyone would bring their own chicken, and then they would eat the Shabbos meal together, and that was the chasm meal, the Shabbos meal, and everything rolled into one. Fine. So the minig was that they were going to the mikvah Tuesday night because that's what they did in the old days. Kind of the minig of Silvius is where it would be. But they weren't getting married on Wednesdays. They were getting married on Friday. So when were they having beer rishon? When were they, in a sense, be with their husband? What was the chiman, really? They would be with the husbands Friday night. No. Because many communities had a minig not to be with the husbands on Friday night, beer rishon, because of the chashash of dam. So therefore, the minig in Eastern Europe was, in these communities, they would wait till Motzei Shabbos. So they would go to the mikvah Tuesday night, and they wouldn't have beer rishon until Motzei Shabbos. So it was a combination of three different minhagim. The minig number one is that the women were going to mikvah Tuesday night, which that objectively doesn't really mean anything. It was just a throwback to the old days. The minig, so to speak, that they made chaslas on Friday, which had no halachic basis, just they didn't have enough money for chicken. And the minig of not being bold with Chilu B'Shabbos in deference that one day in Maseches Ksubas, who said that this man is not supposed to be bold with Chilu B'Shabbos. So it was those three, I think what I call the minig, the minhagim, their practices, their culture, they all combined to create a new reality on the ground. The new reality on the ground was mikvah Tuesday night and Birush Shem Mitzvah Shabbos. So we do the math. It's 4 days. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 4 days. So the Rambam writes, since that was the sanctioned practice in Eastern Europe, and the Rabbanim were okay with that, that became the norm, that became the minig, until Adiyam is it. So a girl gets married in Bergenfield today, and she wants to know, Rabbi, when's the earliest time I go to the mikvah? And the answer is within 4 days. Within 4 days. I explained that you know where the 4 days came from. They came from the no chickens in Poland, and they came from the not being bold with Chil B'Shabbos in deference to the girl's sashri, and they came from the women who wanted to fulfill the minig of their grandmothers from 1900 years ago for the time of the Batei Dinim, in days of old. So at least there be, it was three practices that none of them are have any relevance with Mamazah. We pass the Nikra Din Mutal the public food chance. We get married and we have plenty of chicken teacher in the week also. We have plenty of sushi for the chasanas, even not on Friday night. And none of the women are not to go Tuesday night. That meaning is unheard of with Mamazah. We're going to do whatever's convenient. So those three minhagim, which none of them are relevant for us, somehow gave birth to a new minhag. And the meaning is 4 days. It's a strange thing. That's it. As I state, I'll teach the Sharsi Mecha. So for whatever reason, Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted this minig to make it into the Ramah, and this became the practice for Klal Yisrael. And this is the Adayim. So when a girl calls and asks me, Rabbi, I'm supposed to go to the place. I'm getting married on a Sunday. I don't want to go to Mikvah Motzei Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos is a bad night to send Kalaf and Mikvah. Motzei Shabbos, the Mikvahs are very, very busy. Especially this time of year, it's very late, and some people didn't go Friday night. It's hectic. You don't want to go Motzei Shabbos. So, Rabbi, I want to go to the Mikvah. And Kalaf's really allowed to go with Yom anyway. I'd rather go to the Mikvah. It's easier for me to go on Thursday. I got to get my hair done on Friday. I got my nails done. I'd rather go Thursday night. I want to go Thursday afternoon to the Mikvah. So, what? You can't go to the Mikvah so close. You have to wait, right? No. The Ramah says within 4 days, it's good to go. So, we follow this minute, even though, as strange as it is, this minute is based on a lot of things that is not really absolutely get my set. But, Acharei Klesikol, the only reason we're talking is not a Shinuch neither, it's a Shinuch Shabbos. But this minute came into existence because of this sugya about Chaybel. So, when all the dust settles, we have three Mahalchim and Rishonim, why Chaybel is also either it's Tzeveya or it's Sheikhet, so we don't know exactly which one it is. It's one of the three offerings. Next week, we'll talk about some real practical applications of the Melach of Chayvel, the use of Chayvel, this man. Okay, wish everybody a wonderful one.